Well, welcome to another edition of Must Know People. It's John Ryan with you. We are recording this podcast here at 1730 Tap House. We want to thank Hugo and the crew here for providing our spot for all of this. And looking forward to today's interview because I first met this guy just a couple months ago. He was brand new in town. And the reason I wanted to have you on the podcast is because you're not afraid to give your opinion. That's what I thought. Aaron Koiker is the city manager here for Carroll. And it was one moment specific. You were on the air, first time I'd ever met you. And I just thought, well, let's throw him this question out there and see if he answers it.
Throw me a curveball.
Yeah, kind of in essence of that. It was about the lights downtown. And you just, I mean, flat out said, okay, here's, you want to know what I think? Here's what I think. And that I was like, okay, right there. That's why I want this guy on the podcast.
Well, it doesn't do a lot of good. And I've always kind of lived by this philosophy. I'm not very smart, so I just assume you tell me what you're thinking, and I will tell you exactly what I think. That way we don't have to beat around the bush, and I have to try and figure out what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It wastes a lot of time that way.
I think that's very wise advice for a lot of people out there. Unfortunately, they will not take that advice.
Well, some people won't, no.
Yeah. So tell me, Koiker, is that Dutch?
That is Dutch,
okay.
Yes.
You grew up in what, Sioux Center?
Yeah, I grew up in Sioux Center. My dad actually grew up in Rock Rapids. He was one of seven kids. And then my mom grew up in Fulton, Illinois. They met at Central College, Fighting Dutchman, I think is.
Yeah,
I think so. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. And then my dad was a superintendent of schools. So we kind of bounced around a little bit. Was in I-35 school district and then Lake City before it became South Central Calhoun.
Oh, so you got a little history here in this area.
I do. And
how old were you when you lived there?
I went to preschool, kindergarten, and first grade in Lake City.
Okay.
And then we went to Sioux Center and second grade all the way through graduation in Sioux Center.
Okay. Northwest Iowa has a great reputation for football. We all know that here because they pretty much kick our butts in football in the playoffs just about every year. So you were up in Sioux Central.
Sioux Center.
Okay, let's get that straight.
Yeah,
first.
Central is over by my dad. When he was a superintendent in Sioux Center, he was always upset that Sioux Central became a conglomerate or a combined school district, and they called themselves Sioux Central, which he was like, that's going to confuse so many people. You got Sioux Center and then Sioux Central.
And it still does to
and
this
it does
day.
To this day.
So tell me about growing up there. What was it like in Sioux Center?
Not a lot different. I mean, Sioux Center and Carroll are probably two very similar towns. Actually, Sioux Center has grown more over the years, but all in all, very good communities, very people-oriented, mm-hmm. concerned about each other. We moved to Sioux Center, I think, mostly because my aunt and uncle, who most people might recognize because Verndon Herter is my uncle, and his aunt and his wife, which is my mom's sister, lived there. So we ended up my dad got the job as the superintendent of schools there in Sioux Center. So that's what we ended up living there and mm-hmm. grew up there.
No, you had a twin brother, right?
Yep, I have a twin brother. He lives actually up in Spencer now. But yeah, we were, we kind of, in basketball, we made sure we used 9.5 fouls per game. or I should say that's what the average was.
It's wise use of the fouls that counts in basketball sometimes.
Not very many teams had a center that had 10 fouls.
Exactly. I bet that's true.
And we usually made them hurt.
Did you play all the sports
yep.
up there? Like, I mean,
yep.
in small town, everybody plays the
yeah.
sports, don't they?
In fact, it's kind of fun story. We played football, obviously, and we were in the state quarterfinals. Got to the state quarterfinals. The year before they put the quarterfinals in the dome, we had to go down to Logan Magnolia and play a home game at Logan Magnolia.
In November.
For the semifinals.
Yep.
That was my junior year, so we got to play there. State track, Evan and I, my twin brother and I, both qualified and placed in the discus and the shot put. And then my junior year, we went to the state baseball tournament and was in the I think at that point in time, it was in Marshalltown, and we played. There was only four teams that got to go to the state baseball tournament, so we were one of four there. And I missed the state basketball tournament 3 years in a row in the district championship game, sub-state final. And I think the two sub-state final games, I think we missed it by 3 points combined.
Now, what years are we talking about?
That would have been 1998. Well, it would have been 1990 and 1991.
Okay. So, but football was your standout, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you and your brother both Did you both get football scholarships to Iowa?
Yes. Okay. We both went to Iowa.
Tell me about the recruiting, because back then it was way different than it is now. I mean, now there's video, there's everything else.
Yeah.
How did they hear about you guys? I mean, obviously the size.
The only way you got noticed at that point in time is if you got scholarship, you had to show up at their campus, at their camps in the summer. And Iowa still does that to an extent, but obviously not nearly like what they did back in the day. Mm-hmm. But no, we went to Nebraska. I met Tom Osborne when he was coaching at Nebraska for that. We went to their camp. We went to Iowa's camp. They still had tape that our high school coach was a good promoter of us. So he was sending out VHS tapes. We were actually recruited by Colorado State. Could have gone out to the
Air. Both of you?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, we for the most part, we were recruited as a package.
Did you flat out tell colleges, hey, we're going together?
I think we did.
Okay.
It didn't turn out that way in the end because he ended up transferring from Iowa up to North Dakota State. Uh-huh. But we were recruited by North Dakota State, really thought hard about going to North Dakota State over Iowa and Nebraska and Iowa State because they – and K-State, too. They had just won the national championship that year, and so that was kind of a neat – their history and program is – pretty neat.
Honestly, you're probably as close to Fargo as you are Iowa City, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a 5-hour trip up to Fargo, I think, and it's almost a 6-hour trip over to Iowa City.
Was that the start of like their real dynasty up there, the Bison and all that? Were they already in that national power?
They were already in that national power, but then they were at Division II at that point in time, and through Evan's career up there, he was a conference champ a couple of years, and they were never a national champ when he was there. But then they switched to FCS, and then they really got going in the 1AA or the FCS level.
Yeah. I was at the stop, too. The FBS is the bowl system. FCS is the championship thing, whatever it is. So how many years was he at Iowa before he decided to transfer?
A year and a half.
So what made you want to stay at Iowa while he wanted to transfer?
Well, two things. The spring of our first year there, John O'Hara was the offensive line coach. He recruited us. Great man. He passed away in February of that year. Then a new offensive line coach, he was actually the assistant and recruiting coordinator. He took over, and what ended up happening is he ended up running Evan out of the program. And I happened to be second team. I was on special teams. I was playing, doing a lot of stuff. So after the season got over that next second year, Evan bolted. I was also dating a girl by the name of Michelle, and
I believe she'll come up later.
Yeah. and so leaving at that point in time was kind of tied down.
Yeah, I can see that easily. But, I mean, he didn't have to sit out the year. He just probably wouldn't transfer. That's probably why he went to Division II at that point.
Yeah, but like I said, North Dakota State was one of our top three choices between Iowa, Nebraska, and North Dakota State.
Mm-hmm.
And the offensive line coach there, Bruce Somm, Rocky Hagar was the head coach, was as far as offensive line coaches, he could carry his weight with John O'Hara and I forget who the offensive line coach at Nebraska was at the time. But
if only Blankman were here, he would know the whole
thing. He would, but you know what? He was fantastic, and he recruited us really well. And when Evan said, "I'm done, I'm going somewhere else," the first call he made was up there, and that's where he was going.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like I said, you decided to stay. You had more ties at Iowa. You were getting more playing time. But you played for Hayden Fry. How much did he have to do with the recruiting of you?
After I committed, he called. Is that it? That was it.
He gave you, he cared enough to call.
Yeah, well, actually what happened was Dave Triplett was the main recruiter. And John O'Hara was the offensive line coach. So between Dave Triplett and John O'Hara were the two guys we talked to the most. And they got together, and then they said, "Coach Fry, we want to offer them scholarships." And then that's who actually offered us the scholarship was Coach Fry.
Ah, so he made the most important call. It's the one to give you the scholarship.
Yeah.
So what was it like? You get to Iowa. You're from small town, Sioux Center, Iowa. You get there. I can't imagine their facilities were anything like they are now.
No. But at the time, you know, they still had very nice facilities. Now, not quite as nice as Nebraska's at the time. I mean, Nebraska was right in the middle of that last championship run
in the 90s.
That last run. Notice I said last run.
not most recent. Last, you said.
But, yeah, they're their facilities were good. I mean, they had a great weightlifting coach, powerlifting coach by the name of Ray Moran, who we got a lot out of. Was very similar to the weightlifting coach over at Nebraska. And so facilities weren't that much different. What ended up being the big kicker was we wanted to pass block a little bit more than what Nebraska did. Mm-hmm. We were very good pass blockers coming out of high school because our coach liked to do – he had a West Coast offense-esque type playbook in high school. So we did a little bit of pass blocking. So we were good pass blockers at the time. And so we're like, well, we do this pretty well. Why would we just throw that tool out the window and just run block?
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of ended up being – because Iowa and Nebraska, my senior year in high school, ended up being in the Orange Bowl and the Rose Bowl the same year.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like, we're really not choosing between a 1A and 1B. They're about the same – or in our eyes, as mm-hmm. high school kids, they're about the same. So that's what we decided – how yep. we kind of
– You're still making big-time major New Year's Day bowls and yeah. all that back when that was the thing to make. But so I mean, run blocking, really? I mean, I thought offensive lineman dream was to run block. They want to go out and beat somebody instead of standing back and letting them take the abuse.
So what do you think I enjoyed my junior and senior years more, pass blocking or run blocking?
I would say run blocking.
Yes.
Easily.
Yeah. We had – by the time I was a senior at Iowa, we had a tailback by the name of Cedric Shaw. He was pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, pancake blocks and clipping off linebackers and stuff like that. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love that when they describe offensive line. Well, he's just nasty. He's mean, you know, and it's like they mean that in a great way.
Yes.
When they're talking about that. But give me your aha moment when, like, welcome to college. What really opened your eyes after you first got there? Was there anything that just like, oh man, I need to step up my game.
So the first padded practice, I was playing. We were on the scout team. We're red shirts, and the defensive line had Ron Gator, Jeff Johnson was the other three technique. Leroy Smith was the defensive end,
mm-hmm.
and I think I don't know what play it was, but after the first practice, both my twin brother and I had the nickname the Hanson Brothers. Do you remember Slapshot?
No.
The hockey movie?
I have not
movie?
Seen that movie, no.
They were renowned for fighting.
Oh.
So guess what Evan and I were doing?
Yeah.
basically it was the hold on, defend yourself because yep. cause if you back down, then you're in trouble. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you don't take it and give it some back – they're going to walk all over you.
Yep.
Those guys are like, they're just freshmen. They can't take
yep.
it.
So the first practice there, the first padded practice, I ended up getting a pancake block on one of the defensive linemen. He was a second teamer, but
did not go over well.
I'm a redshirt freshman, and I just got your second team defensive tackle. So, ha. But, yeah.
How much did you play? First of all, what position? Guard?
Yes.
Okay.
And tackle.
Oh, he played both guard and tackle. Okay.
I played reps at every position except for center, mm-hmm. and I lobbied real hard the end of my senior year just to get one rep there so I could say I played all five.
Wanted to do all of them.
Wanted to do all of them.
So, true or false, offensive linemen are the smartest players on the field?
True. Close yep. to it.
I would say. I mean, there's so much more. The only time they get noticed is when they make a mistake.
That's right.
They don't make a mistake. You don't want to hear your name. You want that non-recognition.
Nope.
And you sat in my office the other day. I said, was it compared to like being a mushroom, yep. I think I said?
Offensive linemen are, this is a podcast. Can I swear a little bit?
A little bit.
Okay. Offensive linemen are like mushrooms. You're kept in the dark and fed fish. So,
yep.
But you go out, you do your job, and you hope nobody ever hears that Aaron Quaker did something because it usually means Aaron held or he mm-hmm. jumped off sides or something dumb. And otherwise, Cedric Shaw ran for 1,500 yards or he ran for 150 yards in that game or whatever, or 200. Or there was a couple games I think he ran for 300 against Michigan State once, I think. But, yeah.
Great.
You just didn't want your name
mm-hmm.
mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. So what was the favorite place to go play other than Kinnick? I mean, was there a great place in the Big Ten or a place you guys went to, bowl games? I mean,
you know,
you played all over the country.
Yeah. The only place I never did get to go play was in the Southeast in Florida. We got to go play over in Giant Stadium for the it was the Kickoff Classic. I can't remember what it was called. But it was Kickoff Classic. We played in Oregon Stadium one year. Got to play in Colorado Stadium. Got to go down, played in Texas and San Antonio and in El Paso for bowl games. Played in San Diego for the Holiday Bowl one year. I enjoyed, and you'll probably find this a little bit odd, but my favorite stadium to go play in was Minnesota.
Really?
In the Dome.
Wow. They talk about the most depressing place to walk into as a fan.
Yes. But for some reason, I had a couple of my best football games at Minnesota. Just got to utterly destroy a couple defensive linemen in my junior year and my senior year. It was just a great time.
Most overrated place to go play. Where was that? Was it like some Michigan? They always talk about the Big House.
And the Big House was it? Oh, yeah. That was actually an interesting story. That was my first career start as a left tackle, as a sophomore. Wasn't even remotely physically ready to play.
I was going to say, were you like puking before the game? And
I did that every game.
Did you?
Just about every game. Wow. I knew I was going to play halfway decent if I threw up before the game started.
All right.
But my first career start was up there, played against all Big Ten defensive tackle and an all Big Ten defensive end, and I'm playing as a sophomore, and I'm a young kid. I graduated at 17, so I was still young, not really physically ready, and I struggled. I started three games that year as a sophomore at left tackle, and those were struggles.
In other words, your name got mentioned
a couple of times. Yep.
So was that why it was overrated? I mean, when you
go into Ann Arbor and you think all the noise with 100 and some thousand people, I think they're up over 110 now, but it was still over 100,000 when we went up there. You would think that was just deafening. I mean, we're used to playing in front of 75, and about the time they get rocking and rolling, you can't hear anything. Well, we go up there, and we're having conversations, and we're losing, and they're probably cheering as loud as they can, but it's still not quiet.
You? Wow, that surprises me, because I would think it would be the opposite. Yeah, like it's 104, it's the Big House, you know, and those crazy Michigan fans and all that. But, yeah, that's I always kind of wondered about those stadiums and things like that, these legendary stadiums. How many of them really deserve the reputation of being a famous place to
now,
go play?
Now, the Horseshoe is a really loud stadium, too.
Is it?
Oh, the Horseshoe, Penn State, Wisconsin, those were fun stadiums because they were loud.
Did you feel Wisconsin move when they do the jump around?
Yeah. That whole stadium moves.
That would be a little concerning.
For us that year when we were there, that was my senior year. That was one of the games where Cedric Shaw rushed for like 200 and some plus yards, and we handled them. Mm-hmm. That was when they were a little quieter. But the story before the game, Coach Fry says, listen, if you're on the sidelines or we're walking on and off the field at halftime, whatever, you have to have your helmet on because those guys will be throwing beer cans at you.
Yep.
And he was right. You're walking off the sides and tink. What the heck was that?
Wow. Nice fans out there. So give me a Hayden Fry story, one that probably maybe people don't know what – because, I mean, he was always just the larger-than-life guy. I mean, and then you got Kirk Ferentz coming in afterwards, who was just Mr. Button-Down. Both went about it in different ways, but Hayden is just so revered.
Yeah, and most people – if you know Hayden, everybody understands for the most part, Hayden didn't do a lot of coaching, or maybe they didn't know this because Hayden didn't do a lot of coaching on the sidelines to individual players. Mm-hmm. He did his coaching in the coaches' meetings during the week, and then he would, he still ran the offense when we were there. But he didn't talk to us much. The only time he talked to you was when you screwed up, and it'd be, "Dadgummit, Aaron, you got to do better than that." And you'd be like, "Yep, all right, I'm sorry, sir."
Oh, if you got the dadgummit.
Yeah.
Now, that was serious.
Yeah.
He was just such a, for lack of a reference term, a good old boy, you know?
Yeah.
And he just, that personality fit perfect with his team, with the university, everything about it.
And that was probably, you talk about dadgummit, that was serious. That was the worst thing he ever said. I mean.
Really?
He didn't cuss.
I would think, behind the scenes, you always hear about these coaches that are like, oh, they're just, nice as can be, and on the recruiting trail or this, and then you get them at practice, and it's 180 degrees the other way.
Not Hayden. Now, I would say my offensive line coach was very – he was a very good recruiter. And about the time he lit into you, you got cussed up one side, down the other, and you'd still be going, what just happened?
Would you have rather – you played for Hayden Fry. You played for the coaches you did. What about Kirk Ferentz? Would you have wanted to play for Kirk Ferentz? Do you kind of know him at all?
Yeah. Actually, know him? I probably not. But, I mean, can we go have a conversation, like – talking to him when he comes over for the iClub stuff, or if I go over to Iowa City for a legacy event, or last year I went down for a professional development type thing for the graduating seniors, talking to him about public government work, whether it be law enforcement or city government work in general. Yeah, I usually have really good conversations with him when we're there doing stuff like that. And to me, he's extremely genuine. He's a very forthright person. I've enjoyed every time I've had a chance to talk to him.
Tell me if I'm wrong here, but the public loved Hayden Fry more than they like Kirk Ferentz, but I think maybe the players love Kirk Ferentz more than the players that Hayden Fry had. Is that fair to say?
You probably are right. Like I said, we didn't have a lot of contact with Coach Fry. Now, there's a lot of guys out there that just loved Coach Fry, and I would agree with that. I love Coach Fry. He gave me a great opportunity, stuff like that. But the personal relationship that you had with Coach Fry as compared to what I think Kirk has with his players are probably two different things.
Yeah, I would think that. I mean, they're just so vastly different. You don't normally see a coach of Hayden Fry's stature move out without maybe even a bigger personality coming in. But Kirk was never like that. And he knew what he was the whole time and has never changed. So you got to tip the cap to him for that.
Yeah, he's that steady ship. Yep. I mean, he's just steady. And that's okay. I mean, some of the fan base, they want to see somebody flamboyant.
Yeah.
I would tell you I would have been on the Bobby Stoops doorstep the minute Coach Fry announced, but that was their choice, whatever, you know. But
yeah, and he had a great coaching career too. Yeah, so.
But Coach Ferentz has been extremely successful over years, and you can't argue with that.
Exactly. So one question I always had about Iowa football growing up, I grew up in South Dakota, didn't see a lot of Iowa football. I wasn't an Iowa football fan. I moved here in 94. What the heck was the standing tight end? What was the strategy behind that? It made no sense to me.
Coach Fry would tell the story. Well, he wants that tight end to be able to see if there's blitzes coming and help the quarterback be able to point those things out. I don't know if that worked or helped. I mean, it certainly didn't help me much when I was trying to double team with the tight end on somebody, because I'm like, hey, you get your pads down a little bit. Help me out here.
Because the one thing you want to do is get lower position than the guy coming at you. But it's tough to do when you're standing up. It's easier when you're in a three-point stance.
Yep.
So I never understood that, but that was the signature. That was his deal. Iowa's football.
Yep.
That was crazy. I just didn't know. I just wanted to know the strategy behind all that. So
it was just a thought process that he could help out with blitz pickup and stuff like that easier that way.
Whether it happened or not, we don't know.
I don't know.
Nobody has done it since, so maybe that tells you something about it.
Might be.
So otherwise, off the football field, how was Iowa? I mean, what else did you do there? Was it all football, all consuming?
Oh, well, we did a lot of fishing. We got Sailorville Reservoir there, and me and a couple of guys, we'd go hit the spillway and catch some saw guys. They were a cross between.
Tell me you weren't living in the dorm at the time. You didn't take them back to the dorm.
You know, we might have gotten in a little bit of trouble cleaning the fish in the dorms. In fact, my twin brother and one of our other buddies, they went out duck hunting. And you know how the Iowa River goes through Iowa City. And, of course, there's always live ducks and stuff down there. Well, they went out duck hunting legally, came back, cleaned the ducks, and we had a big investigation that they had gone down and grabbed ducks
off of the river. Explain that one to security when you're doing that one. So you met your wife at Iowa?
Yep.
How did you guys meet?
Well, quite honestly, her brother was a walk-on in the same class as me. So he actually lived across the hall in the dorms, and she would come down and go out with a lot of the team and stuff. And then we just started getting to know each other, and that's kind of how we ended up meeting.
And what year were you at this point?
Actually, that was the end of my first year there, 1992. So, okay.
Yep. And what year did you guys get married in?
We got married in July of 1995, so it was the summer before my senior year.
Oh, you were married before you even got out of college.
Yep. So our honeymoon actually was the bowl trip that year.
which went on to being where?
The El Paso, Bowl? Texas.
Oh, the Sun Bowl.
Yeah.
There you go. So you talk a lot about hunting and fishing. I know you on your social media, you're a turkey hunter. You love to fish, things like that.
Yep.
Are you one of those guys that could live off the grid?
If I had to, yeah.
Yeah?
Do I want to? No, not really.
Oh, okay. You're not like vehemently a hunting and fishing person.
In fact, hunting-wise, I probably haven't hunted in 3 or 4 years. But fishing-wise, I enjoy ice fishing. I enjoy going up to Chamberlain, doing some walleye fishing there, going up into Minnesota up to... We do at least one summer trip up to the Brainerd, Minnesota area, and coming up here on the 4th of July week, and we'll do some walleye fishing then, too.
Yeah. I tell you, I keep telling my wife, is like, well, when I retire, I'm going to have to learn how to fish. I grew up in Pierce, South Dakota with Lake Oahe and the Missouri River right there. I was not a fisherman.
Wow.
Not at all. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna start at 60 whatever years of age, and I'm gonna be out there an idiot trying to figure out how to tie a hook onto a line.
Well, I can teach you how to do that.
Okay,
if you need to know, I can teach.
I may need a crash course on doing some of that. But you got into law enforcement after college, right? I mean, was that right after college you went to?
Yeah,
law enforcement.
My playing career was pretty much done at that point. I had
no ambition to go to the pros or no opportunity to.
Yes, maybe. I mean, I might have had a free agent contract if I'd have really pursued it. I was ready to be done, too, though.
Just the physical toll it
took
on you?
Mentally, too.
Did you stay healthy during your football career?
Overall, yes. I've had one knee was scoped, but, you know, my shoulders are pretty banged up at this point in time in my life. So I'd taken some beatings, but I'm doing pretty good health-wise. So, yeah, going through college, I had studied sociology with the intent I was going to go into law enforcement. My older brother was a Polk County deputy when I got out of college, so I ended up getting hired as a officer in Polk City, Iowa. So that was where my law enforcement career started.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the spring after I graduated is when I started there. And then I ended up going to West Des Moines and spent the bulk of my law enforcement career there as a West Des Moines police officer. And then I ended up going to the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy and was an instructor there for a number of years, too.
So tell me about West Des Moines. I mean, to me, that's a bigger city to be able to be a police officer. And you had to run into some scrapes down there that, you know, I don't know how much you can tell me about things like that. But, I mean, what kind of things did you run into as a police officer there?
The answer is yes. Yeah. Again.
Do you get like the graveyard shifts?
Oh, absolutely. That was the best shift to work.
Really?
Yeah.
You wanted that.
I used the analogy. It was a little bit like playing football with guns.
Okay.
So
let's just add a little element of danger to football. Yeah.
Yeah. It was an enjoyable career. I enjoyed law enforcement. West Des Moines at that point in time I don't remember what their population is now, but I mean, it wasn't quite as big as it is now, but I mean, it was a growing community. It was an opportunity to really be in a bigger suburb city. I mean, we had the same things going on in West Des Moines as Des Moines did. We just not quite as often.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was one year, I think, of the night shift handling gun calls, whether they were in apartments or in cars or something like that. I think I ended up getting stuck on just about every single one of them for like a month or two. I was like, I'm kind of drawing the short straw here. I don't know if I like this part. But
I bet you got good at it, though.
It was one of those things. You handled it and moved on.
Yeah. What was your nature like? Because, I mean, you're a good natured guy sitting here talking to, you know, is that how you approach law enforcement? Because sometimes those guys, when they're on duty, and I get it completely, you have to watch out for yourself. So you're very protective about who's around you and what's going on. You don't, you're not openly joking with people and things.
Actually, I treated people with respect and quite frankly, very similar to how I treat people now. I basically allow them to dictate how I'm going to treat them. So if they want to be treated with respect, they'll treat me with respect, and then everything will go off without a hitch. If I got called every blue-colored name in the book, then that changed how I responded to them. And, you know, I think I was very fair. You were always careful. My wife, when I actually told her she couldn't come ride along with me anymore because she's always like, why do you let them say that to you? Or why do you let them do this? I'm like, well, you know, I'm just letting them dig their own grave,
yeah,
per se.
Yeah.
So just go right ahead, call me every name in the book. That's fine. No skin off my teeth.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I've talked to Brad many times, and he was like, oh, the key thing is just de-escalate. Let them, maybe they're blowing off a little steam, having a bad day.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to let that go. I'm going to let that slide until you can't.
In the end, I'm going home tonight, and you might not be.
That is very true. If I get called to your house, there's someone that something's going to happen down there. So.
Yep.
So you went to the Law Enforcement Academy after that to be an instructor.
Yes.
What were you an instructor of?
I got to do the fun stuff. I got hired there to do the driving and basic general law enforcement education. But then the longtime defensive tactics instructor retired. So then I got to do all the hands-on stuff. So all the ground fighting, grappling, punching.
This is back
kicks.
In your lineman days.
Oh, it was all kinds of fun. And so I got to do that. And then I even got to go get into the firearms instruction stuff a little bit. I was an assistant with that, but I didn't do a whole lot of it. But I got to do, at one time, I think I was teaching almost a third of the basic on my own.
Wow. That's
because
a lot.
Basic hours. So it was the hours that I was teaching were quite a bit.
So what did you enjoy most about that, and why did you want to leave after about, how long did you stay there?
I was there for about 4 years.
Okay.
I enjoyed the camaraderie with the kids. I mean, I wasn't that old. I was in my mid-30s, I suppose, at that time. I enjoyed the camaraderie, getting to know them, teaching kids how to handle themselves and, again, react with the public and react with the bad guys and learn how to become a good cop. I enjoyed teaching that stuff. The frustration for me was it was the same thing over and over and over again, and I just didn't see a light at the end of the tunnel on how to that would improve, because it was a machine. Two academies in the fall, two in the winter, two more in the spring, and it just, you went year round, and you never had a chance to really improve yourself and your skills. So as I got to that fourth year, I was more looking for how can I improve my career, improve my position administratively, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I ended up in city administration.
Yeah, but before we get to your career as a city manager and things like that, your son is currently at the Law Enforcement Academy, correct?
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, we forgot to mention totally that you're a new grandfather.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Maya was born, it's been a little over a week now, I think. Yep, she was born on Thursday a week and a half ago
mm-hmm.
now.
That's what we intended to do this
podcast.
That's
when we were going
to
do that,
time,
yep. And I was out of town then.
Yeah.
Ashton is in the academy right now. He was hired by Ankeny PD. I guess I should say, I've got my wife, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
We've been married now it'll be 29 years in July. And then we have a younger son, Landon, who is at the University of Dubuque studying to be a pilot.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So what is it about law enforcement for your family? Was there a history of that before you guys, before you and Evan got into it?
Quite honestly, no. My older brother, Lance, he got into law enforcement a couple years before we went to college, or it was about the time we went to college. He started in the Des Moines area and was in with the Polk County Sheriff's Office. Then Evan and I both got into law enforcement coming out of college. It was kind of fun. Lance was on the midnight shift for Polk County Sheriff's Office. I got hired by West Des Moines, and I was on the midnight shift in West Des Moines. And then Evan got hired in Ankeny, and he was on the midnight shift in Ankeny. So we actually got to work together a little bit here.
Yeah, I bet. There was probably calls that involved all three of you at times.
Yep, once in a while.
Yeah. When does he graduate? When does he start?
He will graduate, I think it's about mid-August is when he graduates from the academy. And then he'll go into the field training process there at Ankeny.
How young was he, and was he influenced because you were in law enforcement, clearly?
Probably. He was born, I think, the first week I was working, started in West Des Moines. So he was born on November 14th of 1997, and I think my hire date was November 3rd of November that year. So it was just, of his 26 years, I spent 15 of those in law enforcement. So,
you said you got a little burned out at the academy. It was the same thing.
Yep.
You decided to go back to school at that point. Is that where you got that?
Actually, while I was at West Des Moines, in order to move up the ranks at West Des Moines, they kind of expected you to have a master's degree. So I had gone back to school and got a master's degree while I was working at West Des Moines, and master's in public administration. And so at that time, I'd kind of thought about what were my options. And they talk in a public administration, they talk more about city manager work than they do police chief work. So I was like, oh, okay. And that's kind of when I'd gone to the academy. Part of why I decided to go into city administration was because of that master's degree.
I say, was it your first choice, or, you know, given your druthers, would have been anything else? Or
At that point in time, I didn't want to go back to street work and working midnights and stuff like that. I had two young kids and didn't really want to do that. So, yeah, that's when I ended up going into administration. Yeah.
So you go back to Hull as the first job you had for city manager, right?
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to go back to the same question I asked before. What's your aha moment when what first problem you faced as a city manager? I'm sure in Hull, it's not a big town, but it was kind of back in your neighborhood up there in Northwest Iowa.
Aha moment.
Yeah. Was there anything that was like, I didn't think this job would involve this, but.
Well, usually it was a lot of the complaints that would come in, I'd end up treating them just like a law enforcement deal, because you never think about city managers saying, this is the law, this is the code, this is the way it is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about that. But then here I am, somebody's complaining about somebody's fence, and I'm sitting there going, well, the code says this, so that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Deal with it. You know, I mean, so that those were the things that were, it ended up to me being not a lot different than being a police officer. It was just, all right, I'm the complaint department, and I'll look the code up, and then I'll tell you, oh, by the way, this is the way it is. Sorry.
You were just the guy holding the rule book saying, here it is. You can read it for yourself. So, I mean, really kind of law enforcement. I mean, because city manager, you're in charge of the police department. You're their boss.
Yep.
And all that
to
stuff.
To an extent,
so,
yep.
Kind of a way to circumvent the chief and then get right back on the top of the chain right there, right?
Well, yeah. And that's part of, I mean, my goal would have been eventually to be a police chief if I'd have stayed in law enforcement. And that's kind of what my thought process with city administration. Well, okay, I'm not a police chief, but now I'm running an entire town or an entire city. And that's got its all new, unique challenges and things that are probably as much or more enjoyable to me now than what being a police chief would have been. So
I've talked to other city managers here in Carroll, and obviously the bigger the city you go, the more money you make as a city manager and things. So you go from Hull to maybe the most diverse community in the state of Iowa in Fairfield. I mean, you've got the Maharishi Institute, and I talked about from Matt Wietrich, who was from Fairfield, on a previous podcast, and he loved the diversity, and there was all sorts of different restaurants and stuff there, and that had to be different too. That had to be a unique experience as a city manager.
Absolutely. They had different political beliefs. I mean, the beliefs came from California, came from New York, then you had your normal Northwestern or Midwestern beliefs. So they were all really kind of interesting to sit and listen to what people had to say and why they were going that direction and stuff like that. Michelle and I always made the analogy being in Fairfield was very similar to being in Iowa City. It was just on a smaller scale. So we enjoyed it. It was time for us to get back closer to home and
get back closer to Sioux Center. And that brings you here to Carroll. So what was that whole process like? You find out there's the job, you apply. What were your first impressions of Carroll when you got a chance to really take a deep dive into what that kind of a community it was?
Well, looking at Carroll is has a great base. When you start looking from a city manager's perspective, you start looking at, all right, what's their tax base? How is their levy rate? What's their debt ratios? How are they financially as far as cash on hand, all that stuff? And, of course, you know, the city staff in Carroll has been done a fantastic job over the years, obviously well-managed from Gerald Clausen and then Mike over the last 6 years prior to me here, now that I've actually been here for a year now. It's in a great position. It's in a great position, and I think has a lot of opportunities to move forward.
Did you talk to Gerald much? Because he was prior to Mike. Mike was probably gone by the time you had come to interview, wasn't he, Mike Pokey Weaver?
Yeah, Mike was gone. But no, I know Mike, so I talked to him a bit. I've only met Gerald once, and that was just here recently. But yeah, I spent more time learning from Mike, and then actually was really fortunate that I knew Jeff Kaler before I came here, and I spent some time talking to Jeff too. So
have that law enforcement connection coming right back to you there. Yep. So that helps a lot. Talk about what the biggest advantages you saw for Carroll. Why you wanted this position?
Location. It's literally location, location, location. I have family up in Spencer. I have family over in Boone, and this opportunity to be close to all of them, and then my wife's mom lives in the Des Moines area, so just being in that area, you know, my oldest is close to this area too, so mm-hmm. I mean, the opportunity to be in a location where we can settle down and just we can do whatever we want with whoever we want in a decent amount of time and in a strong community was just, quite honestly, it was too good to pass up.
My theory of being close to family is you want to be close, but not so close they can just drop on by. They have to call first.
Correct. And we're an hour away, so that works out great. Spencer's an hour away. I'm an hour drive from Boone for where my older brother lives. Yeah, my mom lives up in Arnold's Park. So,
but just in case, you know, like, no, I'm going to pass today, so I'm busy today. You can't come over. So,
No, I'm going somewhere.
Yep.
Where, I'm not sure yet, but we'll be gone.
Yeah, exactly. So what's the biggest challenges you see for Carroll going forward and things?
Being aggressive, being progressive in economic development. I think we've been adequate in economic development, but I think there's a lot of meat on that bone yet. And I really think as we can get more aggressive in the economic development, because I think we can really do a lot of good work.
Can you expand on that? Because I know a lot of people say, yeah, we've got a lot of things going here. And what are those things? I mean, what meat is left on that bone?
Well, we can recruit businesses. There's about three development agreements I'm working on right now with businesses to come to town or expand here in town. I think those are really great opportunities, and once those those shoes drop, then I think we'll have some other opportunities. Our housing opportunities, we all know that we're short housing, so how we go about becoming more aggressive and working with our housing issues will be things that we're working mm-hmm. on now moving forward. So I think those are those opportunities, and quite frankly, as a city manager, those are the fun things to work on.
Yeah, the exciting new things that are coming to town. Is there ever going to be a big thing like Pella, or a bigger industry coming to town? I mean, we just the population base and the unemployment and the housing. Is there, because we're probably talking, very small businesses coming to town, correct?
The ones coming to town right now, no, they're not going to be. They'll employ somewhere between 25 and 50 people. So
which is pretty sizable.
Those are nice.
For Carroll,
Will we ever get something like Appella? I wouldn't say no. I mean, look at Boone just got Daisy Dairy. I'd love to have that conversation.
I'm not familiar with Daisy Dairy.
Daisy okay. sour cream and mm-hmm. Stuff like that. Yeah, that's what's going to Boone now.
Oh.
It cost Boone quite a few dollars to get him to come, and the state helped doing that. But, I wouldn't say no to something like that. But, we might need to do – I would say we might need to find some more people or a workforce to help us with that.
What are we not doing that we should be? Are we not out there advertising enough? Are we not out there making a name for ourselves? What's going to spur that on?
Well, a couple of things. I think the development agreements that we're working on right now, the city's never done before. They're very – very generic through a number of different areas that I've worked. I've done them 100 times up in Hull. I've done them down in Fairfield. They do those things across the state, but they just haven't been done per se to an extent here. Housing, same way, development agreements with developers to help put infrastructure in and use their tax increment that they create to pay for the infrastructure that they're putting in, or the city uses the increment to pay for the infrastructure that the city puts in for the developer. All of those things are things that we should look at and do, which in the end doesn't even affect the tax levy rate that the city has, because it becomes an increment deal mm-hmm. where you're not using your debt service levy to pay for it.
What do you say to all these folks that come up to you and say, I don't want my tax dollars going to this. You know, we don't need this in town, and we should stay the same. They're very anti-progress, almost.
It's very short-sighted.
Do you get people to come up and say that to you?
I've heard it, but you're only doing one or two things in life, right? You're either getting better or you're getting worse. Because even if you're staying the same, this goes back to my athletic career. If I don't do anything, somebody else is doing something to get better. So then I got worse, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
So you're either getting better or you're getting worse. And you've got to continually look at how we can improve, how we can grow, how we can do things to become a better community. And that means how do we, and in today's age, how do we incentivize those things? If you're not providing an incentive of some sort, another town is, and you're going to get left behind. I talked to a housing developer who's done housing in the area but hasn't done any housing here in Carroll. And he said, these other communities are giving me free lots.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I? I'm like, I get it. I understand. I understand. You get free ground to build on.
My chances of making money in this town are exponentially
better
than it is if I'm not getting it.
And if I have to pay $60,000, $70,000 a lot, well, it's awful expensive if I can go over to town X and get a free lot. Makes a lot of sense.
So if I'm going to put it in a nutshell, it is the anti-mushroom argument. If you're not getting noticed, you're losing there.
Yep, you're correct.
But as an offensive lineman, if you don't get noticed, you're getting ahead.
My career,
get your name mentioned.
My goal for when I retire in 15 years is the city of Carroll is in a fantastic place. It's in a fiscally great place. And Aaron, he was a pretty good guy, wasn't he?
Really?
That's my goal. Yeah, we did great. The city did great. The council was doing great things. Yeah, that guy, Aaron, he was a decent guy.
Be part of that golden age of some things.
That's all I want. I don't want to be remembered for doing anything, but we did a good job, and Aaron was a good guy, I guess, in the end.
1 year in the books.
That's right.
He's ready to roll here from now on. All right, we're going to get to our speed question round here. We're going to wrap things up here with who's the most famous person you've met?
Ashton Kutcher, Demi Moore, Verdon Herr. Quick story. Sorry, I'm going to ruin your speed round. When I was working West Des Moines PD, we got a call that Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore and couple of their kids were in a bar, and they wanted escorted out of the bar to their car. So that's how I got to meet Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah. Escorting them from the bar to the car. There you go. Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
No cats.
I like cats. They taste like chicken.
All right. I'm going to leave that one there for all you pet lovers out there. What was your first job?
Janitorial work for the school district when I was in junior high.
While you were in junior high, you had that job?
A summer job.
Okay. Do you make your bed every morning?
Straighten it.
You straighten it. You don't do the hospital corners? Because
at
the Law Enforcement Academy, they teach the hospital corners.
Yeah.
I know this.
Yeah. But yeah.
How well do you cook, and what's your favorite thing to make?
Oh. I'm a pretty good cook.
Are you more of a grill guy or a cook?
I like smoking food.
Mm-hmm.
My best would be a brisket, I think. I did grill some pork chops for my older brother the other night, and he was pretty impressed. So I do okay.
The first time I tried to smoke a brisket, no kidding, the Lakeview Fire Department showed up at my house.
Oh.
I don't know why. they were like, all
you
the
had
fire
the
trucks
smoke
went,
rolling, didn't you?
Apparently. I didn't think it was that bad, but somebody thought they saw some smoke coming out of our house, and I was like, all right.
How'd the brisket turn out?
Terrible.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't bring it up to a big enough temperature on the inside. I pulled it out too soon.
Too soon?
And my wife saved it, though. She put it back in the oven and softened it up and did all that stuff. So eventually we did have brisket there. But what advice would you give to your younger self? Kid in Sioux Center, Iowa, going to play football at Iowa?
Huh, that's a good question. Probably stay the course. Don't get hung up on the little things. Make a decision, stick with it. I'm looking at what I'm telling my kids at this point in time now, because, you make the decision, that's fine, do it. But you need to live with it. Don't go back and forth all the time. So,
Yeah.
Those are
I always tell my daughters, like, make a decision. If you don't like it, make another decision.
Yep.
You know, eventually you get good at making decisions for yourself, and you learn from all those mistakes and things. All right, music choice. What's your go-to playlist? What's on it?
Oh, mostly Christian contemporary stuff. You know, Casting Crowns, Mercy Me, King and Country, that stuff. I sang a little bit in the at our church for worship team, so.
All right.
I have to stay up on that a little bit.
Man, city manager's got a vocal talent. It can smoke a brisket for you. Man, it's Aaron Koiker, the city manager. Aaron, appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much for doing
this. Oh, this was great. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah,
thank you.
It always is great. So, Must Know People. And again, we want to say thank you to Hugo and everybody here at 1730 Tap House for hosting us once again today. And again, keep on listening for more episodes of Must Know People coming up.